Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing good, Josh. How are you doing?
I am good. I woke up about 15 minutes ago, so got my little iced coffee. Life is good. You seem happy.
Yeah, I'm very happy that I got connected with you. Firstly, thank you very much for accepting my invitation and accepting to be on my podcast and YouTube channel and on internet.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I've gone through your profile. I can see you're doing different works. So I thought to tell about your work to my audience.
That sounds great.
So can you please introduce yourself? Before that, can you be in the middle of the camera so that you can
Yes. Teams has this little overlay. I thought I was. I now realize I was not. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, this is great.
Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. Get my OBS in the background. All right. Whew, excuse me. Hey everyone, I'm Josh Goldberg. I'm a full-time independent open source developer. That means instead of having a real job at a reputable company, I work on my own on shared open source projects that I think are useful for the industry. Most notably, I work on TypeScript ESLint, which is the tooling that lets you run tools like ESLint and Prettier on TypeScript code. So that's pretty useful, and I really hope you're using us. Separately, I'm a Microsoft MVP for dev tech, and I'm also an author of the O'Reilly Learning TypeScript book. Buy it today. And I like cats.
And what
Is
kind
that
of
good?
projects? Yeah, what from where are you from?
I'm from Philadelphia. Well, rather, I'm from upstate New York, then I lived in New York, then in Seattle, but now I live in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia.
So, what kind of projects you do?
A lot of open source stuff around TypeScript. So TypeScript ESLint, the tool that lets you run ESLint on TypeScript, also Prettier. That's kind of a big thing and a good chunk of my time. Right now we're working on a V6, which has a lot of really nice configuration betters than before. That was grammatically incorrect. But also I do a template TypeScript node package on GitHub. That's just this really nice starter for having a repository with all the tooling you could ever want for a TypeScript package, like linting and spell checking and automated releases. And that's been taking up a lot of my time recently because I'm going to be using it for all my projects, but I keep finding things that I want to add to the template, like say spell checking or automatically recognizing contributors in the little README table. So I've been working on that for a little while and doing a lot of little spin-offs from that. So I'm hopeful it'll be done soon so I can start onboarding all my other packages.
And what are your technology skills?
Well, I learned C++ in college, haven't used that in a few years, but I'm very strong in HTML, CSS, JavaScript, the kind of web foundation and fundamentals. Back in the day, also wrote C Sharp and PHP. I could probably still write C Sharp, PHP, maybe not so much. But I was a staff software developer at Codecademy for a little while, the web platform team. So I did a lot around what we sometimes call soft skills, like mentorship, setting up interview processes, worked on their RFC process, and so on. So I've kind of done a lot of the stuff associated with being a developer.
So I can see you worked in Microsoft. So what was your work?
Oh boy. So I was at Microsoft. I interned summer 2014, which is a great time. Highly recommend the Microsoft internship. We had a David Blaine concert. And then I was full time middle of 2015 through end of 2018. When I interned and beginning of the first full time bit was on the business team called Dynamics, which had a lot of really nice people in it and a lot of cool software, but I did not care about the product at all. Business software. So I switched over to Office, specifically a team called Sway. Almost no one has heard of or used Sway, which I think is a pity because it's a really cool product and I'd highly encourage anyone to check it out. It's something called intent-based authoring. Instead of WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get, which is like Google Slides, Word, a lot of software today. Sway does all the layout and formatting for you with some little hints you can give it. So let's say that you want to put in some text, a heading, an image, a tweet embed, a YouTube embed, and a document, whatever. You do that, and then it can lay out like a vertical scroll, like a Google Docs, or it can do like a presentation view, like PowerPoint. And it's really accessible, and can save you a lot of time. So I worked on the web side of that project for a couple of years until I needed to move from Seattle, which is the west coast of the United States, to New York, the east coast, and left Microsoft.
So what is your responsibility? What are your roles?
Are you asking for my open source work now or from... Okay, yeah, it's a little different going from full-time dev to open source. I do a lot of things, and it's kind of, I'm spread a little thin right now. I'd wish to do fewer. Probably the thing I spend the most amount of time on is reviewing issues and pull requests on GitHub. There are a bajillion of those that get sent in a week, and it's everything from small documentation typos to large feature requests to just people getting mad at us without following the instructions for how to file an issue properly. So for each of those things and others, we have to take a look at the issue or pull request, understand where the author is coming from, give a response, and if it's a code change, review the code change. So that's a lot of fun. I enjoy that. I think it's cool how in open source, you can just, anyone from India to Alaska to Azerbaijan can just contribute. It's awesome. I also do a lot of advocacy work. So I speak at conferences, go on podcasts and YouTube channels like this lovely one, and generally have an online presence. Linting and formatting are parts of static analysis, things that people can do through their code that they don't always do right. So there's a lot of contention and I think falsehoods abound in the industry of what you should or shouldn't do. So I'm trying to help people find the right path and how to properly lint and format their code.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like how I have a lot of freedom. When I worked for one specific company, even if I had total say of what I would do within what the company wanted to get done, it was still for that company. Like at Codecademy on the web platform team, I loved working with my coworkers, working on a product that helped people learn to code. That's like one of my passions. But it was still always stuff for, you know, that company. It wasn't the shared tooling that everyone else would use for the most part. But now I get to work on, let's say, contributions to TypeScript itself, or one of the big technical projects I'm working on is this performance option that should make TypeScript ESLint significantly faster in a lot of cases. Like, I think that's awesome. Like, I'm doing stuff that whatever thousands upon thousands of developers will benefit from. And even if the end result is that a few thousand people go, oh, that's a little faster after running an update command, I think that's still a pretty good benefit to the industry. So that makes me happy.
So most of your career, you worked as a developer.
That's right. Yeah, I've never had... Well, I worked as a... When I was in high school, I was a summer camp counselor on summers. But otherwise, it's always been some kind of developer, yeah.
So what kind of application that you worked for in this career?
Ooh, from the start, my first tech internship, one where I actually coded, was in college, university in the States. I was at a neuroscience lab called Schalk Lab up in Albany, which is in the state of New York. It was really cool. They did brain computer interfaces, and I did their website. But that still means I get to say I worked for a lab that does neuroscience. I first did their website, which was a Drupal PHP affair. Really liked Drupal, great tech. Then eventually I got a little more integrated in the lab. I ended up spending 2 summers, 2 winters there and some part-time work. I wrote this ridiculous MATLAB application. That's right, MATLAB. Stack Overflow developer surveys indicated least favorite language of developers. It was this cool thing that like did a visualization of lab data that with interactive querying. It was this whole thing. And then I eventually did do some prototypes for their C++ software. I don't think any of them ever shipped. Anyway, professionally, I worked in Dynamics, the business part of Microsoft, for an internship, and then a little bit when I was full-time. Most of my Microsoft career is that way. And then at Codecademy, I did everything in the company. Like I ended up touring most of the product teams before joining the web platform team, where I worked on the shared tooling and processes worked by everyone at the company who worked on any sort of front-end code. I know that's a lot, so I'll stop there.
So eventually you're working for different businesses. So how, what is your experience when you're working for different businesses which are, which needs and which requires different functionalities and features, and how adaptable you are?
I'll give you a broad question and then question the question. I'm not sure what you mean. I think I'm pretty adaptable and I like being adaptable. I think every business is different, especially when you go from a giant one like Microsoft to a little one like Codecademy. So, just understanding the different kinds of internal politics and the plays that they make in tech. Like at Microsoft, there was much more about long-term sustainability and documentation than at a smaller company that might not exist, in 10 years. But yeah, what do you mean by that? I'm curious.
So, working in different projects, you will be seeing different projects requires or needs different functionalities or features. And those businesses that you're working for, that projects belong to, have a constant change. So how you are able to adapt to the change and give the output that that business or that project needs?
It's an interesting question. I honestly haven't thought of it in that way. So now I'm kind of processing. The way I see it, every little project you work on has its own separate needs. Like for example, at Codecademy, we did this effort to replace the text editor that users needed or that users would use regularly because the old text editor wasn't accessible and this new one, both open source projects, this new open source project we found online was accessible. Shout out Monaco. Great software project. So I don't know. For each project, I take vaguely the same starting approach, which is I talk to people ahead of time who understood the area before me, if they are still there. I figure out what the designer, the product manager, user research, what everyone says, everyone's inputs. Whether I listen to them is a different question, but I try to at least understand everyone's opinion. I figure out what needs to get done. Just in terms of features and what needs to be done in terms of technical scales changes, and then I do those things. I think working at a company for more than 6 months, you kind of start to really pick up on the shared obviousnesses they're called, I think, where like people tend to assume things are done in a certain way at each company. So if you've been there long enough, you can kind of pick up on that. But yeah, I don't know that I have any specific answers or strategies for that question. It's just a different way of thinking, I think, which is kind of cool.
So, what are those challenges that you face in your present role?
Money. I earn about double the minimum wage in the United States. I earn minimum wage from open source funding and minimum wage from book royalties. And I realize that minimum wage in the United States is not the worst thing in the world, and there are parts of the world where that's not exactly small. But I have also United States level rent to pay, and if I didn't have a spouse who had health insurance, I would be very unhappy. Open source funding is kind of an industry problem as a whole. There are very few incentives for companies to sponsor open source dependencies. Most of the time, it's been very large companies that have long-term sustainability concerns, supply chain concerns. Or relatively small to mid-sized companies that want to get their names somewhere so they can advertise. But I think it's a real issue. I should not have to spend a significant amount of my time begging for money on the internet. It's time I'm not actually working on the projects. So yeah, that's the biggest issue that I have right now in my role. But I'll also say that like not having a good supportive environment around me the way I did when I worked at, say, Codecademy or Microsoft, not having a manager and a mentor and peers, people to give me feedback and all that. I kind of missed that. It was nice.
So how is this working alone and doing the things by yourself?
Well, it makes me really appreciate the times when I do get someone working with me. I'm not the only maintainer on TypeScript ESLint, nor am I the most deeply familiar with the code. So there are a couple other maintainers who've been there longer than me and are pretty consistent in being there. James Henry created the project and Brad Zacher, who was also the steward for a while. Those two are really, really capable, awesome people. And every time I get to meet with them, it makes me happy. But it comes at everything comes with pros and cons. Like the freedom means I get to putz around on the internet and work on random projects. Like yesterday and the day before, I wrote a little CLI tool that figures out which projects of yours are eligible for Tidelift funding, which is one of the companies that can get you paid as an open source developer. So pros and cons. But I don't know. I'm happy. I'll probably keep doing this for at least another year or two. We'll see.
So you are seeing the difference that is happening, difference and the change, the constant change that is happening in technology. The businesses are adopting to the new ways of making things. So how you are able to advance yourself in terms of skills?
I pay very close attention to what's called the Gartner hype cycle. It's not proven, and it might not always be accurate, but it's the idea that most or even all new big technologies go through three stages of hype. The first stage is maximum hype. Oh my God, this is awesome. It's called the peak of inflated expectations. I think we're currently somewhere near that peak for AI. Then we get the trough of disillusionment, where after we've all gotten excited about the things, we start to realize the limitations of it. Everything is pros and cons. We're now looking at the cons. And I think crypto is currently in the trough of disillusionment. And then once we've gotten past the trough, where we understand all the ways the thing is not good and have a more balanced, objective understanding of it, then we can get to the plateau of enlightenment, where I think maybe like cloud is at the plateau and has been for a little while, Docker too, where we understand how to do it right. So I try to understand where new technologies are in the hype cycle. AI is at the peak, so I personally don't like working at things when they're at the peak because it annoys me everyone getting all overexcited about things and calling it the future and this will revolutionize humanity and crap like that. So that's my big tip to the industry. I get really annoyed by people who think that every 3 years there's something that revolutionizes the world. But otherwise, no, just keep your ear to the ground, as they say. Pay attention to stuff that might be useful to you. Technology is always shifting. We're always learning how to do things better, which means that A, there's always an opportunity to learn the latest and greatest. B, the latest and greatest might not stay great for very long relative to the other things that have come out. And C, I also think it's okay to not be constantly shifting and evolving. Like if you're a developer who knows a certain set of tech, and you get a job doing it, it's fine if you stay doing that thing for a little while. I don't like how there's this kind of implicit pressure on people to be constantly learning and reinventing themselves. It's a good thing to do, but not everyone has the time and energy for that. So, scattered thoughts.
So in your present role, how you are able to match the human's requirements with the technology skills that you have?
A lot of people skills coming into play, whether I have them or not, they're coming in. The way I like to describe working with other humans, other developers outside of your project in open source is to ask people to imagine the difference between working at a small company versus mid-size versus large. The larger the company, the more people, the more teams, which means the further distance away you are organizationally from your average partner team. Like at a small company, you might even just know everyone personally by name. But at a big company, you have inter-office politics. The game switches from cooperative play, where you're all going for the same goal, to sometimes even competitive or adversarial. Where bigger companies that have a more hostile internal environment, like Amazon, you're actively competing with each other. So on that scale from small to large, open source is even larger, where not only are we in an adversarial relationship with some of our partner teams, unfortunately, we don't even have the same goals as them. We're not even working for the same company. We have no personal context. We just get these requests from people. Hey, your crap is stupid and broken. Go fix it. So I have to be very careful with how I phrase things online and how I set up communication channels. Whenever someone makes a request of the project, I have to try to remove the personal context from the request, try to remove any niceties they say or kind of gruff intonations, especially since a lot of the people who ask things of us are not native English speakers and might honestly believe that they're being extremely polite while they are cussing us out. So a lot of kind of taking a step back and trying to work with people as pleasantly as possible and try to understand, like, what are they actually trying to use us for? I don't know that that's the right answer to your question, but that's the first thing that comes to mind for me.
So how is working for different levels of companies, small, medium, large?
I like it. I like that I've gotten not quite the gamut. I haven't worked for like the five person in the garage startup, but I think it's very useful to work for both a small company and a large company. It's similar to living in a big city versus out in the burbs or suburbs, as they say. It's neither of those might be for everyone, but I just like that I've gotten both experiences because they have pros and cons, their differences. When I worked for a small company more recently, I knew everyone around me. For a while, I knew everyone in the company. I had much more of a percentage of the deciding say in decision-making and culture changes. And it felt like more of a tight-knit team, like us versus them. We had this product. We wanted it to improve the world. We were working together. But at a big company, you have a lot more people to pull on. Like a lot more experts. Like at Microsoft, there were people who had been programming since before I was born on the team sitting, you know, 20 meters away from me. You don't get that many of those people, if any, at a much smaller company. And you have the name brand on the resume. Like I've gotten a lot of things available to me because I have Microsoft on my resume, even though honestly, objectively, I'm not that much better than most of the other people who graduated university at the same time as me. So I don't know. I like both of them. I think now I'm doing open source, which is a totally different thing. And I truly don't know what I'm going to do in 2 years. I don't like planning that far ahead.
So you have experience in working in different environments and with different people. So how is that working in different environments? In different companies with different people.
I like it. Everyone is different, but you can kind of start to see archetypes of people come into play. So I like working with people, figuring out how they're similar to folks I've worked with before and how they're different. It's kind of like a game, you know, like rolling the dice. Like every time, ooh, you never know what you're going to get. The old Forrest Gump, life is like a box of chocolates idea. I think working with people is the best way to level yourself up as a developer. Everyone has a different story and experience set to build on. And I've learned an incredible amount from people around me. And that's one of the things I miss, being an open source versus in a company, having a direct line of access to people I can learn from. So I highly recommend to anyone working who wants to better themselves, find people who you can work with often, find people you work well with, and get a diverse group of people around you to maximize experience gains for you. Like don't just hang out with a bunch of dudes you went to college with. They might be good friends, but also hang out with folks from a different background, a different gender, a different racial identity, a different professional background. Like that all factors into the stuff you can learn from them. And also it's just cool to learn about different people.
And what is your driving force? What is making you wake up in the morning every day and do the job that you're doing today?
Fear of having no money and losing my apartment and spouse and cats. No, I want. Have you ever seen the show Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
Okay, you know that there's that running joke about how every startup has the theme, make a world a better place, or whatever, to the point where Ehrlich Bachman is like in a drug stupor reciting it. I really resent that because that's actually the phrase that I relate to, make the world a better place. But it is really silly how a lot of startups, they have like business to business, like spreadsheet software, make the world a better place. Objectively, they might be, but you know. Anyway, I want to make the world a better place. How am I going to do that? The things that I'm maybe not uniquely, but relatively well positioned for are tech education and developer tooling. I really enjoy helping people get into tech. I think the industry is a really good opportunity for folks to make money and get out of bad situations, to put it nicely. So getting more folks into this industry and helping make it more diverse is good. I like that. I also think I'm relatively well positioned to improve dev tooling. Like I think I'm pretty good at this, at improving things like TypeScript ESLint and occasionally contributing to TypeScript and stuff like that. So that's what gets me going. The idea that I'm helping make the tech industry and the world around it ever so slightly better and ever so slightly more efficient for developers to work in. That I don't know, that it sounds very grandiose, but it makes me happy. I think I'm doing just a little bit to make the world better.
So how was your education, your college life?
It was tough, but it was good. I took a 1.5 computer science programming courses in high school in Java, then got into a relatively good university in America, RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. RPI likes to say that it's rivals with MIT. MIT probably does not remember who we are. I had a 4-year CS degree there. The computer science department at RPI is excellent. Like, the professors really care, a lot of them. It was tough. We learned C++. I frequently questioned my decisions in life the first third of my time there. But I ended up getting better as a student, and I ended up doing a lot of project work with ARCOS, the open source group, Rensselaer Center for Open Source. I'd say a lot of people these days are downplaying the benefits of a 4-year computer science degree because you can get a lot of those same benefits from, say, being self-taught or going to boot camp, which I agree with. Like, you going to a boot camp or taking online courses is a very good and valid way to get a tech education. But 4-year CS degrees, those work too if you have the opportunity. And I really appreciate a lot of the relationships that I got out of my time there. For example, I met my spouse first year. So that's one thing I got out of it that I'm hopeful to keep around for a while. So, yeah.
So after completion of your education, after coming out of college, the projects that you have done, comparing those projects with the projects that you are doing today. So where do you think you have reached in terms of technical skills and technical knowledge? What you can do with the information that you have or the energy that you have?
There are kind of two areas of stuff that I have done and do. One is your traditional web applications. Write a front end for a back end that does X. And then the other is the shared dev tooling things. Write a lint rule that detects this bad code spell. In college, I did much more of the former. Nowadays, I do much more of the latter. I don't know. Like, I don't see as much of a difference between different areas of JavaScript or TypeScript usage as I think a lot of other people do. Like, to me, code is code. There might be some better practices unique to a certain area, like, say, back-end asynchronous development versus front-end UI updates. But I just like coding. I'll say I learned not as much around software design as I thought I would in university. We had like one or two courses on it. Most of the like solid principles and OOP and all this I learned from like the book club at Microsoft's or at my team at Microsoft, or just like reading blog posts online or reading and then writing a book. I don't know. It was the projects I work on kind of are all over the place. Like, I've done everything from like accessibility checkers to static analysis. So I don't try to limit myself to one area. I don't know if that makes sense.
So you can do anything in software development.
I can do anything. I definitely can't do hardware. I learned that the hard way in one of those courses, but I don't want to limit myself. Like, I really enjoy the fact that, hey, if I have the time and energy, I could just go learn Rust and then start writing Rust code, because that's apparently a very popular thing now in front-end development, which cracks me up. But no, I used to do a lot of, like, websites. Like, I made this project, Fullscreen Mario, that was an adaptation of Mario. And I built my own game engine for it. It's a terrible game engine, and I never finished it, but it was a fun project. But nowadays, I just kind of float around and do random websites here and there on top of my open source work.
So from the day you started learning technology and knowing how technology works, till today, the information that you have collected being in this industry, how do you think the technology is helping humans to solve their problems?
Ooh, what a juicy question. You've been asking some really, really good ones. I like this. Appreciate it. You've clearly done this before, as evidenced by your giant video count. Well, there are a few areas, and I'll to that. There's efficiency, just the fact that we're able to do things more efficiently. There is scale, like we can do stuff at scales we never were before. There's raw ability, like we can use computers to do things that we never were able to, like sequencing the genome. Can you imagine doing that by hand? But yeah, I think the most exciting thing for me is efficiency. That stuff that used to just be laborious and take forever, you can do like this with a computer. And I think that's where a lot of tech trends that have been successful have like made their, I don't know, made their mark. Like, remember when big data was the latest and greatest, when that was at the peak of inflated expectations, where everything was going to be data and data. That is not the case. Not everything is data now, but we did figure out that using data analysis and trends and all this stuff, you can much more efficiently figure out like how people are using your product or whether changes are good or bad in some objective way. So yeah, I think increasing efficiency makes me really excited, among other things.
What qualities of yours is making you and made you to be great in development today?
I have no self-esteem. I'm a deeply nervous, paranoid little boy, little sad child who desperately craves attention and validation. I did not receive enough of it from peers as a child, and now I am strongly motivated by the idea that I might one day get someone to love me, which is not as much of an exaggeration as you might be thinking. So I'm constantly interested in doing something to prove myself. Like in college, I did projects because I knew for a fact I would never get an internship, let alone a job, if I didn't have some ridiculously cool thing on my resume. And I'm always nervous that the code I'm writing is absolutely garbage and I must learn the best way of doing things, must properly use dependency injection and inversion of control and all this stuff to write truly beautiful code. Yeah. So, you know, have no sense of self or self-respect at all, and truly paranoia around how other people see you. And that's how I motivate. But also, I think it's for people who aren't sad little children like me, I think it's good to not be too full of yourself, to recognize that you're a human and you have flaws, and it's totally okay to not know everything. And also to try to build on that and to say, okay, I might not know everything. Time to learn and use that as motivation to, you know, learn yourself cool things and be okay with admitting when your code is needing improvement.
So what do you say about you communicating with the machines and communicating with humans?
Ooh, I'll say I wish humans were less imprecise, and I wish machines were more imprecise, that I could communicate with machines the way I would with humans, and I wish I could communicate with humans the way I could with machines. Every time my spouse and I have an argument, it's because one of us said something and the other misinterpreted. But that's unfortunate. I'm sorry, is that where you wanted to go with this question? I have a suspicion it's not.
You worked in one of the top companies in the world, Microsoft. You saw how things work and how the businesses work in Microsoft. So how was your experience? How Microsoft is serving humans?
Microsoft makes a lot of software. Microsoft has a lot of teams inside of it. And something I learned while working at Microsoft and also talking to people at other big top tech companies like Google and at the time Facebook and Amazon, is that the bigger the company, the more variant the internal culture. It's impossible to have a 200,000 person company, including vendors, and have the same quality, the same type of teams. And in fact, you wouldn't even want that. You would not want the same exact culture on a team that does low-level IoT and high-level cloud analytics. Like, the two are not the same. So there's this idea in people that are new to the industry or joining it that, you know, there are these top companies and they're beautiful and perfect and I would absolutely only ever want to work for them. There are benefits to working there, but there are also drawbacks. So I'd say Microsoft does a lot of really cool stuff, employs some of the most awesome people out there has some of the most awesome projects, like TypeScript and freaking Windows, like working on an operating system used by like whatever billions. Very cool. So they have the ability to make changes that benefit a lot of people, and they have a really huge charitable arm. Like they have yearly events that give more to charities than some people do in their lifetime, which is really cool. But also, you know, it's every team is different. I've seen my share of internal politics in Microsoft and in other big tech companies. So, you know, pros and cons.
So being a developer, how it feels?
How does it feel to be a developer?
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know. That's a big question. I like it. I really enjoy being a developer. I've always enjoyed building things. I like taking some small building blocks. When I was a kid, it's Legos. Now it's lines of code, little syntactic constructs, and building something cool out of them. I still get that little like, aha, yay, whenever I make something work. But I don't know. How do you feel talking to developers, being a developer? How does it make you feel?
It makes you be extremely logical.
Mm. Yeah,
and sometimes
I say
you
that's
lose.
One of the that's a big benefit of us, right? Like we have to think in very logical ways, and that can be really useful.
Sometimes it makes me lose emotions.
I've been accused of that at times, but I also think it's really useful to apply a logical lens to emotions, right? Like people are not illogical creatures. We may act in ways that seem illogical, but there's always some underlying reason. Like I'm cranky and being a jerk to the people around me, not because the universe has rolled the dice, but because, and then you can figure out like, oh, there's like, I had a bad day or like someone splashed water on me or something. And one of the most useful things that I've ever done, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is apply root cause analysis to myself. Or five whys is the common strategy of just keep asking why at least five times. And at the end of the day, there's always some root logical reason why something bad is in my behavior or feelings. And I feel like I've learned that because I'm a software developer and have been on teams that have gone through like root cause analyses and just think logically. Have you ever tried that? Curious.
Yeah. Not exactly like you, but similar like you.
Cool.
So emotion and logic, you're being in software development, which is extremely logical, and a lot of your technology career, you have been in development. So how this logical thinking affected you as a human being?
Well, it's helped me understand myself. I think if given the opportunity, everyone should go through therapy. Therapy is incredibly useful. It's like running a debugger on yourself. Either you find something and you improve it, which is always what happens. Or if you don't think you got any flaws, well, first of all, that's a weird thing to think. And second of all, it's nice to be validated. So go through therapy and debugging techniques learned in code apply and make that even easier. I think having emotional intelligence is really useful and good. And being a software developer actually, I think, made me more emotionally intelligent, not less. I do not like the stereotype that we're, as developers, emotionless machines. That's stupid. We're real people. And the more senior you get in your career, the more you have to work with other people. It's exceedingly rare that someone who is a senior or staff or whatever fancy schmancy title does not work with a lot of other people and have a significant percentage, even a majority of their job dedicated to soft skills, as they call it, like building consensus, working with other teams, mentoring, pairing, and so on. So as an example, when I was staff, so like the role that's after senior at Codecademy, a majority of my time was spent not coding or even looking at code. Not looking at my own code or pull request reviews. It was spent pairing with people, working on technical proposals, meeting with stakeholders of other teams. And that is a 100% technical role. There's an old joke. What's the difference between a manager and a staff developer? The staff developer still thinks they code. So yeah, definitely plus one on having emotional intelligence as a developer. I think that's something you end up having to build as part of the career. I believe you are muted.
And you wrote a book.
I wrote a book.
What is it about?
It is about learning TypeScript, which is the title of the book. It takes you, the royal you, someone, anyone, one who is a JavaScript developer, not necessarily the most fancy advanced, but someone who understands JavaScript fundamentals and teaches TypeScript. What is TypeScript? Why does it exist? How does it work? Or rather, how would you as a user use it? And a lot of like good pro tips around using it well. I think it's a pretty good book, and I'm really proud of it. It's the first and only book I've ever written.
So apart from development and writing book, what you do?
Well, I was into cocktails for a while, but I'm older and I get really bad hangovers and I'm trying to be healthy, so cocktails are not a good fit anymore. Now I'm into coffee. I'm not like one of those snobs who like gets the pressure gauge perfect or throws out the cup or whatever, but I've been learning how to do latte art, which is nice. My spouse and I have three cats, so that's always fun. I do actually like long walks on the beach. I also go to a lot of conferences and try to rope other people into going on runs with me because I'm trying to get better at exercising. Yeah, that's what comes to mind. What do you do other than, you know, work stuff?
I do this, what I'm doing now.
You seem to enjoy it. You seem to be having a good time. You like this?
Yes. Today, I have completed 600 plus interviews.
That's commendable. How long? What are these, like an hour long? That's like 600 hours of interviews.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, what are the things one learns doing that many interviews? Like the pro tips for interviewing?
Pro tips for interviewing. You have to be very neutral. You don't need, should not judge. You don't need to have the judgmental mindset or a view. You have to leave people like they are and just enjoy seeing different people in the world and listening to different perspectives and listening to different experiences and how they solve problems and what kind of problems that they have solved can be in their profession or in their personal life. Or I interviewed different professionals, not only technology people from NASA, for working in NASA, and also people who are working in police department and like film industry, people who are into authors, they are like writing books for their life, all types of people, like politicians, every whatnot. I try to touch all the industries.
That's really cool. So you've seen across all different industries, like different traits, different people. Are there commonalities? Like, does everyone say something, or does everyone in one career say a particular thing?
Yeah, I have done more than, I've connected with more than 100 countries, professionals. The motivation for me or the objective for me to do this is after completion of my master's, I was preparing for PhD entrance exam, where the computer networks was the subject where I'm trying to understand where computers are interconnected with each other and information transfer is happening using different devices, different protocols, different security systems, and different data centers in different parts of the world. I think I was wondered watching this human's invention or vision to create this communication system between 195 plus countries. Today we are interconnected with these applications, Teams, Skype, all these applications, whatever, with data centers. We came to a time where we can able to send and receive information in fraction of seconds. So I think as a as a human beings, we have invented a lot. We came to know how to solve problems very fast using the technology. Think in last 30 to 40 years, like you worked in Microsoft, these technology companies are moving, pushing the borders with professionals like you, using your knowledge, trying to think beyond what humans cannot do. So I think it is making humans live life easier and have more experiences in their life with the short span that they have. But and coming, giving answer to your question, connecting with different human beings. Actually, I actually become a numb. I don't have any feeling or any sense after seeing so many stories, so many people saying so many things. Before that, I used to have like, you have to live in this way, you have to live in this way, you need to have this kind of a, goals and all. Then after seeing all these people, even people who are into technology for 40 plus years, they are saying about the life. Eventually, what I understood is whatever you do, technology, anything, software development, or I'm DevOps guy, doing DevOps or putting a business, working for other people's business. Eventually, you're a human being with emotions. So eventually you have to respect the emotions of other human beings, because we, like you said in the beginning of the conversation, most of the developers that I have interviewed or that I have connected are less emotional. Like they are not giving respect or value to other human beings. Maybe because communicating with machines for a long time in their day or their month or their year, they are slowly becoming machines. I think that is not, good for them, for their mental health, or like they have to be a social species as well, because we humans are social beings. But I think technology sometimes makes human to be more logical. But eventually, as a human beings, as a technologist, as a professionals, what I feel is we have to use technology to solve the human problems with the skill set that we have, with the skill set that we are developing, how to, how good, how fast we can able to solve problems of human beings using different technologies that we have. It should be helpful, it should not be harmful, or it should not create negative emotions in humans with technology. That's the motive that made me to do this. I want to give this to the global technology experts who are trying to create new technologies or new softwares or whatever. I want to give this, maybe in artificial intelligence that they are working, I want to give these emotions that I have collected, I want to help them in putting these emotions in the AI that they are creating, so that maybe there will be less negativity.
Yeah, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you said. That's awesome. And it's incredible. Like people sometimes fail to realize, I think, what actually is the result of their day-to-day actions and responsibilities. Like we're not building software just to make money. Like that's a short-term thinking. That's profit-based. Capitalism, yay! Like the humanity as a whole direction is influenced by the collective of what we're all doing. And like given the choice between making that direction positive, like helping reduce inequality or like providing benefit to people, I think it's good to try to choose that over just making the world neutral or even worse. So yeah, I really appreciate what you're saying.
So you have developed so many applications. Do you think as a human beings we can able to create that software with which we can communicate with other species on other parts of the universe?
Oh boy. For a second I thought you were going back to like this the traditional dev things, but no, we're going even further into the unknown. Yeah, I mean, the question of alien life is an interesting one. If they exist, why haven't we found them? I just finished reading the Foundation series by Isaac Asimov. Very interesting set of books. I don't know. I try to focus on fixing our crap before we get involved with someone else's. Like, there's a lot of stuff that we got to work on as people. Disinformation, inefficiencies, global food. I mean, every single city in the world has a homeless problem. I hope that in 200 years, we're going to look back at that and go, what the heck? What? The way we do now for, like, I don't know, dysentery or whatever. I don't even know if that disease still exists. Someone out there is probably going, you idiot, right now. But yeah, I want to get humanity to a good place. I realize I am not exactly leading any charges here with that. And a lot of people who said they were, such as Elon Musk, were actually exposed to be self-centered, hypocritical buffoons. But I want us to get to the point where technology can help solve many of the pressing issues now, the way I think it can and should. I think a lot of the societal issues are actually partially rooted in what some of the things you mentioned, like people thinking that they can just interact with machines or not caring about other folks. So like global hunger is an example. I think efficiencies and developments brought on by improved technology can help with that. Obviously, it's not just a tech issue. Like, it's there are real societal problems we got to fix too. But as long as we don't screw up the tech part of it so bad that it makes things worse, I'm optimistic that we can long term make humanity better and better over time.
Recently, I have asked some experienced psychologists these questions, like, why do humans need to have a physical body for feelings, thoughts, and ideas that they have? In the same way, you as a software developer, why do we need to have a physical device or physical infrastructure called data center or whatever physical things for a software?
We don't. Imagine, if you will, the way humanity might be in 1,000 years. Let's say we live in a post-scarcity, post-singularity world. There's no hunger, there's no food, there's no money because everything is free because we can just create everything so efficiently, like, you know, the perfect world utopia, blah, blah, blah. What would a person do when they don't need to work for money, when they can create whatever they want, when no one else, when there's no inequality problems, when crime doesn't exist because what possible crimes can you do? We're all immortal, technology has solved that. I don't know the answer to that. But on a scale of where we are now to that, like, perfect technological utopia where we've solved everything and are just these, like, immortal species, I try to think of what are the problems we're going to solve on the way there. And for starters, let's say that we do make a matrix, like a good matrix, not a bad matrix. Although my personal interpretation is that the machines were the good guys all along, would love to talk to you about the matrix universe. Anyway, I think if we can free ourselves from our bodies and just be these brains on a chip, that could be a potential future. I don't see any reason why we have to have a human body. Why in whatever 100 years we couldn't all be like the cyberpunk universe where we got like robot arms and a tentacle coming out of our back and whatever. Why further on from there we could be digital presences. Like, why not? Like, that is a possibility. I don't see any reason why not.
There must be a strong understanding for you in order to understand the technology or the softwares or the projects that you're working for. So what is that understanding that is making you do things possible? Make things possible.
Different answer on different areas. Right now, a lot of the technical work I've been doing has been static analysis. Looking at your code without running it and getting the little yellow or red squigglies, like the spell checker in Google Docs and Word. So for my stuff specifically in that area, understanding how the language you're writing in works is really good. Like, understanding really what is an if statement. An if statement is in JavaScript, in TypeScript, let's say the word if, parentheses, something, this is a test, and then a consequence, the thing that comes after the if statement. And a lot of people who write code don't realize how technically precise the languages they're writing in are, how an if statement is defined as, and then this very specific grammar. So first of all, understanding the syntax of the language well makes it much easier to write code in that language because you spend a lot less time squinting at the screen, trying to figure out where your missing curly bracket is. But also means that if you really have a deep foundational understanding of your language, you can understand why bugs happen better. Like, because I understand JavaScript and TypeScript really well, I understand how to write rules that can detect asynchronous issues, like creating a promise that this will happen eventually, and then not properly handling what happens if that promise rejects, fails. So yeah, really deeply understanding, like, whenever you write something, what are the things, the tools you're using to write that thing, and how do those tools actually work is very useful in any industry, and from my experience, especially for writing code.
And at last, as a developer, as a person who's into technology, who's into coding from a long time and having experience working in different applications and different people in different environments, in different places that you worked on, what is your observation about my work and about your observation about my questioning in this conversation and my YouTube channels?
I love it. So I have watched some of your videos. I think what you said earlier about empathy is spot on. You are a very empathetic contributor in the sense that you're neutral. You don't judge. Like, I can't tell if I've personally offended you in any of my answers. I'd love to know if you disagree with anything. So yeah, I appreciate that you really, from what I've observed and have now experienced, you really give good broad questions, like ones that allow interviewees to express themselves and show off the diversity of folks in the world, which is good. Like, everyone is different, especially folks who have very different backgrounds and professional roles. So it's cool to see all those different things. I will say sometimes your questions do seem a little like pre-canned. Like, I would love to have like more follow-ups in the questions. Like, you ask me a broad thing, like, I don't know, like, what do I do for my career? Or like, what has worked for my career? And then like, you could dive deeper. But that's not a criticism. That's an option. And I could totally understand why you would not take that option if, let's say, you want to keep interviews to an hour and we're already at exactly 57 minutes. So food for thought.
Yeah, but I cannot complete your career in just 1 hour. I feel very sad for that. But I tried to ask the very specific questions. Actually, my intention to present you is to create change in the world. And people who wants to come into technology, the youngsters who are into colleges, I have so many followers. Your answers, your experience definitely makes them think, and if they grow in their life, and you'll be the reason for that. And I'm trying to frame questions which they have.
Cool. So what questions do they have other than what you've asked already? What do they want to know?
So many, actually, there are so many questions that, you know, the beginners or the intermediate level, also experts, have. But that takes 2.5 hours or 3 hours. Like, it becomes a movie.
Yeah. And it's like one of those ridiculous overblown new movies that have too many stars and too much screen time for each. Yeah. I will then double down to my most recent like actual answer of learning the tooling you're using. I've seen so many people copy and paste from Stack Overflow, or nowadays it's just accept the 15 lines of GitHub Copilot without questioning it. And then things didn't work before they did that, and they still don't after, and they don't know why things aren't working. Well, if you don't know what you're writing, if you don't understand the things you created, of course you're not going to have a good time trying to debug when things go wrong. So really, learn the code that you're writing. Learn why things are the way they are. Don't just accept, okay, this API exists, and I can call it with these things, and it'll succeed. Because that might work for like a quiz or a lab at school or whatever, but as soon as you have to do anything more intense than that, you're going to fall down and cry, metaphorically speaking. So learn the things you're using, the tooling.
And I did master's in software engineering, also bachelor's in computer science and engineering. Right now I'm doing some DevOps projects, cloud DevOps engineering projects. So that is my full-time job. Apart from that, I'm actually, like I said, I'm doing, I'm trying to talk with different country people who are into different professions and who are into different parts of the world and who are into different levels in technology. So you know how people's person can make change in technology. So how my energy or my project that I'm doing, how this project is going to be helpful for me in my career?
I will give you the general answer, and if you want, I can try to give the specific to you, the cherry. In general, when one works on a project, there are a few benefits. For starters, you learn. Like every time you do a project, I hope that you learn something. And then that learning makes you better as a whatever it is you're doing, let's say software development. And it means that you can bring those learnings back to your role, improve your team's understanding, help mentor other people and teach them in those things. It's also a good resume booster. Employers love people who go above and beyond. If you're, let's say, competing with a bunch of other college students from the same university, or like a bunch of other bootcamp grads from the same bootcamp, or whatever it is, you're all going to have relatively similar classes to start. So anything that you did different, or even if you're like a full-time software developer and have been for years, anything you've done differently from other people who look the same as you on paper, that's useful and good. And lastly, yeah, like if you're working on a side project and that project does something good, like makes it easier to do some difficult task or just is cool, show that off, you know, post it on whatever you're on, Twitter, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, TikTok, whatever your platform is of choice, like that, show it off and let other people gain benefits. I think a lot of people fall into the trap of not wanting to promote themselves because they're shy and bashful. And like, for me, I was growing up in like the American Western methodology of self-thought, which is that you should never brag. It makes you look weak. And that's stupid because sometimes if you have something good to show off to the world, you're depriving the world of a good thing if you don't show it off. Is that the type of response you were looking for?
I'm not looking for any response, but I got your response.
Cool. You get what you get.
Yeah. So can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I thought I already gave permission for that. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. And also, can I put this audio? And also, can I put this audio and video clip on my podcast, website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
Absolutely. I might suggest asking that before the interview, but I thought you did. I honestly thought I already agreed to these things, but sure.
So I'll put your web links in the description of this video on YouTube. People who find our video on YouTube can see the work that you are doing and can follow you, can learn from you. Also, the book that you wrote, I also put that link on the screen on the in the description as well. Can you spell it to my podcast listeners, your social presence?
Sure. I am the same tag handle, whatever you call it, on everything. Joshua K. Goldberg, Joshua K as in kite, Goldberg. I normally go by Josh, but Josh Goldberg was taken on whatever platform I used first. So now it's Joshua K. Goldberg. And that's Twitter, Fastodon.com, YouTube, Twitch, Blue Sky. I know I'm missing one, but I have a personal website. You can find links to everything else in there. Oh, GitHub. Duh.
Yeah, I'll put all the links in my website as well. People who visit my website can get all your links. Thank you very much, Joshua, for giving your valuable time and sharing your experience and answering some of my questions.
Oh, thank you. This has been a true pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Great way to wake up in the morning. Hope you have a good afternoon.
Have a great day. Keep going. Keep inspiring people. Bye.